Hola, hello, hi, bienvenido, and welcome back or welcome to Mentors Today. Today, I'm really honored to be joined by Loretta Williams-Gurnell, who is the CEO at Gap Management and the founder of the Super Girls Shine Foundation. Loretta is a Houston-based educator, a leadership strategist, consultant, and STEM influencer dedicated to driving economic growth, access, and equity across her entire community. She has a background in biological sciences and a master's in education. She works through her company, as we said, Gap Management Group, where she coaches emerging business owners, startups, and various decision makers in the community. She's also created the Super Girls Shine Foundation, which we're going to talk a lot about today, that's been instrumental in bridging gaps and fortifying the pipeline for emerging talent from underserved communities. Her advocacy work extends to her roles as a founder of the Super Lady Network and other contributions to overall community development across the Houston area. Through her extensive experience in secondary and higher education administration, she remains a staunch advocate for women and girls in STEM, working tirelessly to enhance access, equity, and leadership opportunities in those fields. I learned today that she's also an awesome mom just before the show, which is a great, another point of connection we have between us. And the greatest point of connection, the reason we're having this show is because we met recently through a trusted friend of both of ours and a former guest for you listeners here on the Mentors Today show, which is Juliana Garzier, who is in Houston and immediately said, "Hey, my friend Loretta is coming through LA and you two got to get to know each other somehow." And when we did talk online during her visit, I met her and her team. I was immediately impressed by the story and her incredible energy, which we're about to share with you. And I knew at that moment, okay, at some point in the near future, I got to get her on Mentors Today, because everything we're about is everything that Loretta is about. So Loretta, welcome to the show. It's great to see you.
Oh my goodness, Rob, it is so good to be here. Happy day for you. Thankful for the sunshine and your energy. Appreciate this opportunity for us just to have a conversation so we can break some barriers and provide some solutions.
That's what we're all about. I love it. You did not, you will not disappoint because you frankly just are who you are all day, every day. Yes. And so I knew if I could just capture a slice of you on this show in this format, it's going to be on the internet for posterity, and we will indeed change the way some people think about some things, and we'll hopefully empower some people with some actions that they can take at the end of all this to build up these communities that you're interested in, but also kind of take some of these lessons maybe and apply it into their own communities, no matter where they are.
Absolutely. Empowerment, transformation, and become the owners of our own success. That's great.
100%. If I remember, and I think based on what we were just talking about before the show, you were a teacher.
Yes, I was.
Long before you ever became the maven of Supergirl Shine and everything that we're going to talk about. So tell us that story. Kind of let's go all the way back to the Loretta origin story. Ooh. You know, where are you from? How did you wind up becoming a teacher and a primary and secondary education administrator in Houston? You're married to a teacher, we found out before the show, right? You're proudly involved in the educational community. Talk about how your professional life prior to Supergirls got us to the point where you are today.
So I'm going to start off with a funny story. My mother told me when I was in graduate school, she was like, "I don't know why you're running from education." She said, "You've been a teacher all of your life. You said you've been educating us and everyone around you all of your life." And I was like, "Ma, I can't be no teacher. I'm a research scientist. That's what I do. You know, I study life and I'm going to do research. I'm going to change the world through research." Well, lo and behold, after that stint in my profession, I had an opportunity to do a summer program. So I played basketball since the fifth grade, played in college, played on a scholarship, played in Czech Republic, and did ministry work. And I had an opportunity to do a summer program back in my home city area through basketball.
Okay.
And when I did that, Rob, I was like, okay. My mother might be right. she just might be right, Rob, but I'm not going to do it just yet. I'm just not going to do it. So I'm going to get my master's in education leadership just as an opportunity to see this space. So I did some adjunct professor teaching. And then I taught at Upper Bound. I did biology and chemistry and physics and all the things that I love, right, in sciences. And I was like, okay, after I did my nonprofit development in higher education, my husband was like, okay, I want to start a family. I was like, oh, know about this one. So we're gonna start this family. One of us has to be home.
Right.
So I said, let me fall back into my education space. It's not too far of a reach. I still be able to do some research, and I still will be able to use my scientific methodology, the things that I love to do. So then I went into secondary education and was a lead administrator in that STEM space in high school and middle school. And what I loved about it is the fact that I still was able to use who I am as a person, come every day thinking, processing, critical thinking, and problem solving, bringing the real world opportunities to underserved and rural communities who didn't have access to certain books, education, resources, and then bring my best self with my colleagues of people who were still in these spaces, bring them to the classroom so that they can see what they could become. Right. And for me, that was education. I was still a teacher, but I was able to educate on Loretta's terms. Yeah. And when I tell you, I did that, and I still do it to this day with my team, and I love it.
That's awesome. All right, so a little background. You're talking to us today from Houston, Texas.
I am.
Are you from Houston proper or the area? Where'd you grow up?
Trotwood, Ohio. Trotwood, Ohio.
And then where'd you go to school?
I went to Central State University in my undergrad, and then I've also studied biological sciences there. Then I was accepted to a research program at Cornell University, so I attended Cornell University through a research exchange program, and then I was able to, you know, finish my master's, go back home and go to Central State University, study my master's and completed that, and I have certifications and doing some other things and considering my PhD now due to some colleagues around me who say, Loretta, it is time.
Okay. Always a student, right? Student for life.
Always a student.
Thank you for all that. And what I love about part of it is as I'm listening to you, and I have the context of our prior conversation where you kind of explained the entire foundation and everything, the work that you guys are doing in the community. And I'm listening and I'm thinking, you were kind of like the original Supergirl shine mentor mentee bridge. Like, you were the bridge.
Isn't that something, Rob? That I think that's what I laugh about what my mother said, because everything that I did. So this was funny. So I had a best friend since we were 3 years old. And in our church, we would take the girls of our church would come to us. They would cling to us. We would take them ice skating. We would take them bowling. We would take them to the hotel and do overnight slumber parties. When we were in high school and college, they were younger than us. Rob, we didn't know what we were doing. We just knew girls needed a community. We loved to be around them. They loved to be around us. I was a baller. Becky didn't play basketball. She played softball. But we both were able to fill the gap of being a big sister for them.
Yeah.
And when I look back of all of the things that we did, I was like, you've been doing this forever. Like, you literally have been doing this forever. And that's why I believe my mother said, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know why you're running from education, because this is so who you are. And I was like, no, Ma, I'm a research scientist.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because obviously your studies, biological sciences, in undergrad, the research, the fact that you are a legitimate, as you say, research scientist, right? This isn't something you aspire to be. This is what you are. Like, that puts you directly in the path as a young woman and a young woman of color of the sciences and the hard sciences, as academia or business likes to call them. And that's not a place where there are a lot of people that look like you.
There wasn't. Right?
Was that, I kind of think I know what the answer is, but like, I would imagine that was hard sometimes, right? But I also have a sneaky suspicion that was also kind of like a fire that lit underneath you. So talk about both those feelings.
Yes. Being the only, one of the things that I guess for me, my mother always called me her unique child. Now, Rob, let me set the tone on that. Growing up and hearing that from your mother, that was not a positive thing. But as I got older, became a teenager in high school and really in my young adult, I realized, wow, my mother was right. I am unique. When I think about my sisters, they are amazing beings in who they are individually, but I am unique. I'm very unique in how I thought. I'm very unique in how I move. I'm very unique in how I process and how I'm very intentional and very purposeful in all of my actions. And each one of us has our own path, right? And when I got older, I really admonished the fact that my mother saw that uniqueness in me. Now, growing up, again, the way she articulated it, it didn't make me feel like I was unique. But once I became more mature and understood what she was saying, I am very unique. And so when I, it's interesting, I really saw myself being the only, but it did not bother me. So you were conscious
I was conscious of it.
Yes.
But not like self-conscious as a result of it.
No. And what I think what it did for me was like, oh yeah, my mother always said I was unique.
Wow.
But then what was interesting, it was like, okay, my mother said I was unique, but do I have to be the only unique one? So we've got to do something about being the only in this space. Yeah. So now my thinking of, yes, I may be unique, and I'm still in places where I'm still the only, but I'm working with other champions in this space, because the work that I'm doing is not in silo. I'm doing it with a group of amazing people who are around me. We're working to make sure that Loretta Williams Grinnell is not the only.
Yeah.
And because that, we're making and breaking these barriers and bridging these gaps and making sure that when young ladies see themselves, they see themselves with added value. They see themselves to have a voice at the table. But more importantly, they see themselves as problem solvers. Yeah. Because if you can problem solve, you can become wealthy with your ideas, because you are changing the scope of being a problem, but a problem solver. And that is huge, whether you're in education, healthcare, business, whether you're in aerospace, whether you're in STEM, engineering, whatever. If you come to the table with the mindset that I have value, I can add value, and I'm a problem solver, there's no space you can go. There's no space that can close a door on you, because you'll learn how to open that door because you're a problem solver.
Sure. The obvious connection in most people's minds would be, oh, well, okay, you studied science, you got your master's in research science, and so that's why you're so passionate about STEM in particular, right? But I don't want to make that assumption. So talk to me about why is it, and in a few minutes, we're going to get to exactly like what Supergirl Shine Foundation is, and we'll do the commercial for it. Like that's all, we'll get to those details. But before we do, a little bit more of this foundation, right? So why is it that in your mind, it's important to empower young women in STEM specifically?
I'm glad you asked that question, because when we look at the economics of underserved communities, what I found is, Rob, is that STEM is the driving force of our economy. So if you don't understand the rules of the game, if you don't understand the game itself, then you'll never know how to play in the game and be a competitor within the game. And so STEM is the game. It drives everything around us. We are STEM. Everything around us is STEM, whether it's in economics, whether it's in the skill set, whether it's in the pillars of STEM, whether it's in venture capital, whether it's in clean tech, it's all there, you know, aerospace. And if we do not understand the processes of problem solving and critical thinking and being able to really come up with an equation on how to be that sustainable problem solver, we're always going to be left behind. And the other thing is, if you don't understand the economics that drive STEM, you won't be able to be a part of the economics. Okay. So one, we have to teach what STEM is. STEM is not a class. STEM is not science, technology, engineering, math. STEM is a driving force of our economy. So what does that mean? That means everything that we do, it stems, S-T-E-M, no play on words,
okay,
from STEM. And so if you understand that, then you understand, okay, so now how do I become a part of this hierarchy? How do I find myself being able to solve the problem in this? And that's what we're teaching the girls and the young professionals. Where do you see yourself in this problem solving, this bigger picture? And how can you become sustainable? And how can you become a unique being in it, where people are asking you to come solve problems because of your skill set? And so once we get to that and understand it, and I'm really trying to get my educator circle to understand, I know that the states have these mandates around these daggone exams and these proficiency exams, but when you stop and make this applicable, and our students are able to see themselves solving the problems, they show up differently in the classroom. They ask different questions. They want to go on field trips or field experiences. They want to do internships early. They want to be in the researcher's lab. They want to go to NASA. They want to do these things because they're like, wow, this is who I am, and this is what's going on around me, and I can be a part of the solution.
Yeah, that's powerful.
That's why for me, understanding that it's a driving force of the economy. And then once I understand that in order for me to be a part of the economics, I have to be a decision maker and not always a consumer. And that's the only way that I can change the trajectory of the underserved community is if we get the skills, we have the access, we create the education so they become aware, and then we give them opportunities to be a part of the solutions.
No, I can hear it and see it clearly. We were talking briefly off air before the show about the bigness of the decision in your family's life to have you commit to building, to like going and doing this, to like yes. focusing on building this foundation. So if you'd like to share a little bit of the decision-making process kind of in your career arc that presented that moment, but then after that, then let's do the commercial. Let's talk about and tell everybody in our audience exactly what Supergirl Shine is and what it's all about.
So, you know, one of the pillars that I have in my life is family. One is faith, one is my family. And without those two pillars, there's no way that I would be here today with you, Rob. I am blessed to be in the family of three dudes. So I have a capital D dude is my husband, and lowercase d dudes are our sons. And when I tell you, when we make decisions around the table and we have our dinner table, our boys know since probably the cognizant of the understanding, we've always brought things to them at the table, particularly those things that we knew that would affect them or impact them for a long time. And when it was decided that when I came to my husband, I knew it was time for me to come out of the classroom. Then this will be the third career change. And he was like, okay, because I told him like 2 or 3 years ago, I say, honey, I think I'm getting to that point where I'm no longer being able to produce the way I know I can if I'm outside of the classroom. Yes, I'm still having great results with my students, but I could do something on a grander scale if I were outside. Didn't know much about, I knew much about a nonprofit organization and because I've worked in one, but I didn't know how to start one.
Sure.
I didn't know one how to lead one. And I definitely didn't know how to hold one up and build it up and out. But one of the things that my husband said to me, he said, I know you have vision. He knows that. He says, I know you have discernment. And if you believe that this is what you're supposed to be doing, I'm going to support you 100%. Now, mind you, Rob, he's an educator. And at that time, he was maybe 17 years into it, 16 years. So finances were different at that time. But we had two young children. But one of the things that we had to look at was the time that I would be able to pour back into our sons, we would never be able to get back as I was building this nonprofit. So we took a financial hit. We took a financial sacrifice. It changed how we lived, where we lived, what we could do. But the one thing that did not change is who we are as a family.
At that dinner table.
Oh my goodness.
Didn't change the context of the dinner table. It just changed. Never. It just changed the surroundings of it.
That's right. And that dinner table became more sacred for us because that was a place that we knew nothing else mattered outside of the world as long as we could get to the dinner table. If we could get to the dinner table, we could talk it through, we could cry it through, we could holler it through. But when we got it from the dinner table, then we were done with it. And we were going to do it as one, as a family. Until this day, that dinner table is still sacred for us. I mean, it is a sanctuary for me to come home and cook and know that at least it's three of us now because our oldest son is in college. But when he comes home from the break, I can't wait till he comes home because gets back to the dinner table. So when I say to people is you have to have a unit around you. Mine happened to be my family. Mine happened to be my faith. Because this walk as an entrepreneur, as a founder, it's not easy. You know,
it requires a ton of faith.
Oh my goodness. My goodness. And it's faith literally the size of a mustard seed because some things you can't not even see or explain. But you just know in your heart that you're called to do this and you go for it and you're going to fail. You're going to have setbacks. But the one thing, if you don't lose sight of your mission, lose sight of your calling, lose sight of your purpose, then you will be able to start attracting the people and detracting the things and people that are keeping you from moving forward. And I just think that's how the birthing of Supergirl Shine Foundation came about is because one, I made a conscious decision that it was time. I had a great family around me who pushed me and supported me. And then my faith allowed me to say, okay, I don't know everything that I'm doing, but I'm going to trust you, Lord. And we're going to do this thing together and we're going to move forward. And now the birthing of what's on the other side, Rob, imagine if I said no.
Right. And we talk so much in life and in business about the choices, the, you know, this choice, that choice, the paths we choose. Very rarely do we do what you just did. And I love that. And that's why it was like, you just dead air for a second, right? Because the power of the, of owning the, not imagine all the 100 other things I could do. Imagine if I hadn't said yes to this path. Right. I mean, there, I like, as an outsider, I can say, knowing just a couple of the stories of a couple of the young women that have gone through your program, like I can say unequivocally, yes, there are lives and life paths of other human beings that would have been or would be different had you not in that, at that dinner table, said yes to yourself. Like, good for you.
And I think about how much richness they have given me.
Of course, because it comes back to you. So again, your life is the first life that would have been changed, but just that ripple effect of just if you hadn't made that decision. Okay, so let's tell everybody, Super Girls Shine Foundation is what and does what?
Super Girls Shine Foundation is a platform where workforce development comes out of the building through STEM skills. It is the game changer when you're thinking about underserved communities, particularly girls and young women, having equity and access and then the opportunity for them to build the skills, have a community where they can showcase those skills, learn those skills, sharpen those skills, be equipped to be deployed to settle this 3.8 million deficit of STEM jobs needed by 2025, with 85% needed in clean tech. And so when we think about the foundation as a whole, it is the business partner to oil and gas, clean tech, health space, aerospace. When you're thinking about this future talent and developing them, you should be knocking on the doors of Supergirl Shine Foundation. We should have a waiting line of corporations knocking on our door saying, Loretta, we need your talent and we're going to sponsor, provide the resources for you to develop the talent, deploy them so that we can have the workforce in order to meet these needs. So I'm waiting for the time where we have a waiting list, Rob, because we know this deficit, and it's not just in the underserved community. It impacts us all because it's our economy.
Sure. No, I love that. The macro view, the economic view is powerful in the story because it's just factually true.
Yes.
Okay. So let's give us some numbers, like give us some data points. Like how, so this story, the coming out of the kitchen table meeting with the family, with the boys, that was how long ago? How many years ago?
2014, we started having this conversation. 2015 is when I did my 1 year of meeting with girls once a month around the community after asking my principal at that time, could we have a meeting at the school? Because I was seeing the girls not having the confidence in the classroom. When I did that, we had over 60 girls and their families show up. I was like, hold up, wait a minute.
So you're just in year one of kind of like, I'm going to do customer discovery. I'm going to kind of go, I'm going to research the market. Exactly. And test these theses that I have in my own head. And immediately 60 families were like, oh my gosh, like, can my daughter come sit in this room? Can I come?
And I was like, literally, hold up, wait a minute. Yeah, right. I'm still in the classroom. I'm still a wife, still a mother of young people. And I'm like, okay, what is doing this? But my husband supported it and I did it. And there's two things that he asked me, Rob, at the end of 2015. He was like, okay, honey, I need my wife back. Can I have her back? And can I have our money back? Because you're spending a lot of money. And I was like, okay, so I need to assess this. So the November, December of 2015, I got with some colleagues. Because remind you, I'd worked and been a leader in nonprofit before, right, but I had never developed or started and founded one. So I had to go to colleagues and say, okay, I have this idea, y'all. I can't have Severin put me out. So we're going to have to figure out how to get these articles so we can get some money in here to do what we know is right. So I went to them. They helped me write the articles they gave. And we were awarded our nonprofit national status March of 2016. And so for almost 8 years, we literally have been looking at, first, we knew it was about STEM education for middle school girls. That was our sweet spot. Then those middle school girls became high schoolers. Right. So then we had to sell middle school to high school. I thought we were done there, Rob, because we were really doing a really good job of having STEM activities, STEM education, and STEM career workforce opportunities for the girls.
But it was almost more of like an extension or a complement to their to the school educational
system. There you go. Exactly.
Right? There's not enough STEM focused on girls over here, so we're going to be that supplemental
program. There you go. But then we realized, well, one, these girls were about to graduate in 2020. Well, we know what happened in 2020.
Right.
And so we all stopped and settled and had a chance to look and think and say, what is going on? And then the girls were like, well, Miss Loretta, what's next? And in my mind, I went to the board and I was like, I don't know what's next, because we said 10 to 17. We were
right.
done.
You're, in your head, you're thinking like a pat on the back and like a good job is
and
next.
And you're done. That's it. We got you to this. We got you to this point. But we knew we had to do something different. And I think the timing of everything was wonderful. A lot of good things came out of 2020. A lot of bad came out. But a lot of good came out of 2020. And one was, we had a chance to look at it globally. Like, how can SGSF impact the world, the world, not just Houston? And we said we had to be very strategic about what's the end game. Like, what do we really want these girls to have and own and possess and be able to do? Well, we wanted them, of course, to be sustained. We wanted them to be sustained in their economics, but we also wanted them to understand the power they have as leaders, and in their leadership, be able to come back and help build community.
Right.
So now we have graduates from high school, collegiates, and we also have young professionals.
Right, because if you hadn't, sorry to interrupt, right? Because if you hadn't, I'm connecting these dots. Essentially, the long vision is change the world by creating a path of opportunity for these young women to use all these skills that they learn when they're young and like find professional opportunities, right? That's the economics of it. But if you were gonna end it at 17, it was like basically we were gonna like hope and trust that the university system and that their young professional lives would like sort it out.
I know.
And so you guys stepped into that gap, which obviously your users, your customers, the young women were telling you, hey, wait a minute. Like, can't you keep holding my hand in a not in a maternal way, but in a helpful way,
exactly.
Right? And all the way through to the point where I become a contributing participant in the economy.
And you know what, Rob? When I look back, and that's when I go back to Loretta, what if you would have said no?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I hear the Kaylees and the Joylands and Joannas and the Marinas, and when I hear them in Chandler's, who are now, she's now studying abroad. And when I hear about, when I think about their lives and what they say this organization not did for them, but is doing for them in this stage in their life, they're now young professionals and they still stand true to the impact of what SGSF is doing in their lives, because they still have a community where they can come and be around professionals to help them in this next phase of their lives. And I think to myself, like, wow, this is legacy work on steroids that I can't even put into words, because literally, Rob, think about this. One Supergirl will have changed five generations from her decision to go through this program. You know why? Because she's equipped. She has access. She now understands the power of equity, and she's not going to let it just stop with her. What she's learned, she's going to then teach it to her sister, to her daughters, to her sons, to their sons.
To neighbors, to people at church, to people at work.
And so that is so powerful when we think about, when people ask me, Loretta, what can I do? It's so much that you can't do, but there's one thing that you can do. If you can make sure that a girl can start and finish through SGSF, you literally have enriched your world.
No, 100%. You know, what's fascinating is if we're looking at, let's look at Supergirls as a business, because that's what it is. It's a not-for-profit business.
Exactly, but it's a business.
It's a business. That's why the IRS refers to it as such.
Right.
Right. And if you did that, there might be some people in the universe who would push back and say, but you're trying to be all things to all people, right? You're not focused. And I would push back on that argument and say, no, actually, what you've done is you've just figured out a way, or you've seen that there was an opportunity to follow your customer truly, which every great company aspires to do this, to follow your customer from cradle to grave. Like you're like, except in this case, it's kind of like we've created like four products of programming that goes through the generational growth of these young students, or then they become young workers, right? As they get to the, and then, as you've said a few times, and we're going to talk about this more, is then they cycle back into their own leadership and participation in the community as mentors and contributors. Some come back to work for you in the foundation, et cetera. It's incredible. And we won't talk a lot about it today, but like, obviously it's it's replicable outside of Houston.
Oh my goodness. Oh, definitely. So, you know, this model, I think this is our year of rebuild. That's our theme for 2024 is rebuild, because we've come to the place where we've done everything that we know to do well, but now it's time to scale. So when you think about scaling, you literally have to rebuild what you've done well. And that's what we're doing right now. We're literally rebuilding how we look at our Supergirls, the mentors, our donors, their parents, our school partners, and our sponsors. And how is it that we can take that and then duplicate it in the marketplaces in which we will go?
Yep.
And I'm having fun in this theme of rebuild, because I'm getting a chance to look through it through lenses of other people who are excited about being in the ship. In the ship, not just around it, but in the ship. And helping to steer it, so it's fun.
That's re-energizing for you as the sun, as the energy source, right? It's nice to get replenished. You mentioned a word there, mentorship. You and I both share a deep belief in the power of mentorship.
Yes,
I want you to tell us why you see mentorship as such a key role in advocacy, reshaping narratives for underrepresented groups. Like, why is mentorship the magic sauce that helps change and provide equity and access?
One of the things I hear colleagues talk about a lot is that, you know, Loretta, you got to meet them where they are. You got to meet them where they are. Well, I disagree with that, Rob. At SGSF, Supergirl Shine Foundation does not meet a girl where she is. We come to where she is and shows her where she can go. And that's what true mentorship is being able to be a door opener, sometimes a door closer, sometimes a bridge, and sometimes a driller. And so we're not going to meet her where she is, because where she is and where her colleague or peer is are in two different places. But if we can show them what's possible, they can figure out where they are, grab hold to the skills that they need individually, and collectively be able to get in that ship and start rowing it with us. Mm-hmm. And so that's the power for me in mentorship. You know, I have mentors in many different areas of my life. And so I think about these girls, and as they're trying to figure out who they really are and the power that they are coming into as they are growing and developing, it's amazing to me that they can be in a group as they have an individual mentor. But when they come and do our mentor-mentee day, they can hone in on other qualities from another mentor who's in the room and not even deteriorate or even reduce the power that they have with their assigned mentor. That's the beauty of mentorship, is because when I understand the value I bring to the table and my confidence is increased, I can see the value and qualities in other people to help me get to my next. And so that's really what mentorship, and you know, you can talk about sponsorships and allies and all those other things, but that mentorship is very pivotal, I think, on how she actually can matriculate from middle school, high school to college as a young professional. Because when she gets those attributes, then she's learning too how to become a mentor.
Right. I was just going to say, and I mean, it's just this, the power in the simple statement that we always hear, right? Is like, if you can see it, you can be it. Right. Or the power of representation in all things in our lives is hugely impactful.
Yes,
right. So to take that student that is in your program in middle school or high school ages and pair them with a 35-year-old woman or a 45-year-old woman that's an executive at an oil company or at a bank or at some other organization in town, like they're not just seeing like a speaker or at an event or in a class.
That's right.
That is very transitory and kind of passing. And like I always say, those things are great. Those parts of the educational processes that we go through in life are awesome, because that burst of new information or that burst of excitement is great. But it's also like a sugar high, right? And it kind of wears off. And so to me, the mentorship is the glue that takes us from one sugar high to the next sugar high to the next sugar high, because it's the consistency of like an example, right? Like, oh, look at this, you know, Juliana is this powerful woman who I might just see from a distance, or maybe I even know a little bit about her in my community. And I think to myself, I can't talk to her. Like she's, but then, as a 16 or 14 or 12, 19 year old, you get to meet her and you get to, and you get to understand that she's just not diminishing Juliana at all, but she's just a woman like every other woman. Like she puts her proverbial pants on the same way everybody else does. And she has the same challenges and issues. And she had to overcome, in her case, had to maybe overcome some of her own barriers and her own obstacles in her career. And then there's that, now we're part of a secret club.
There it is. It's the latest. It's the latest club. And that's one of the things that I love about it, is that our super ladies truly are a representation of what the super girls can become. And that's where it all birthed from. It's like, how can we be super ladies and not raise up super girls? And then I think about what they are just being equipped with in their confidence, being in a room of different, diverse women, whether they're in their culture, their race, in their profession, or even their economics. And what a woman is a woman, right? The core of who we are is the core of who we are. And our journey is what makes us propel. Yeah. And so being able to share that with a 16 or 14, when they learn about my story, they're like, Miss Loretta, I'm like, I know. So don't tell me what you can't do.
Right. No, exactly.
So don't even tell me, because they look at me now and they're like, but there's no way, baby girl, you don't even have enough time for me to share all that I've been through. I'll just give you a snippet to let you know that you need to get this fire underneath you and let's go. So,
yeah. All right. So I've kind of an unrelated but related question. I love the framework of how you see this through a macroeconomic argument, right? And so I'm not going to put you on the spot and say you're responsible for telling us all how we need to change society, but let's talk about you coach in your consulting work, you've coached and led executives and early stage investors, corporations, et cetera. I'm sure you talk to government folks now and your work that you're doing, right? People in the community, talk to us about, from the macroeconomic standpoint, why inclusivity and diversity in the workplace, in our governments, in our communities, isn't just a nice to have. Talk to us about why in 2023 to 2083, why diversity in our macroeconomic reality is critical to our success.
Thank you. It's critical for lots of reasons. I mean, I'll start with the not so good story, and then I'll start with, more of the bad. Really, it's about crime. Think about it. If our Maslow laws, our needs are not being met, we're going to figure out a way to be able to survive. Mm. And a lot of people have had to turn to criminal acts to eat, to have a place to sleep because of jails, the consistency of being able to have that. And when you are uneducated, Rob, I mean, it's huge. When you are uneducated or undereducated, you don't even know that you don't know.
Sure.
And so therefore, you don't even know where to go. You don't know where to show up. You don't know that there are resources maybe two blocks down from you. When you're in a food desert community and you don't have produce, when you're talking about development of brain power, being able to intellect, being able to conjugate a verb, a noun, a phrase, all of that has to do with the economics. If I am poor, I have lack. And when I lack, it shows up in every area of my life. And then crime increases. So now we have gated communities, but you have crime infested right outside of your gate, mm-hmm. right? You can't even drive through your neighborhood to get to your neighborhood without going through infested crime or debris and things. So it's not just their problem. It's our problem, because when we can get the uneducated educated, when we can get them access to healthcare, to resources, when you can go to the dentist regularly, my goodness, it changes your blood. It changes your cognitive. It changes your health. It decreases the amount of persons using the ER as a doctor's office. I mean, just we can go on and on and on about this economics. So when we think about it, politically speaking, if our politicians are not looking at this from a micro level, right? Understanding how I'm getting, going to get really get into the community. Maybe once you get to wherever your seat is, you don't have the time, but you need to build ally communities or alliances within the community where we're doing the work, and then turn around and make sure we have the resources in dollars to support the work. Because at the end of the day, if we don't do it, Rob, what is the United States going to look like?
Yeah, 100%. Your insights are invaluable and spot on. I was having a conversation yesterday, actually this week, I'll tell you a story later, but this week has been an incredible kind of run of three episode interviews, like ending with you today, with three totally different people for totally different reasons, but yet this theme has presented itself. And my comment I made yesterday in response to the guest that I was interviewing yesterday was this idea that, like, multiculturalism and a more diverse population and therefore a more diverse economy and just more diverse school, all that is inevitable. Mm-hmm. Like this is not what we're debating.
Oh no.
But and so those that want to just pretend that that's not true, they're basically just, we're wasting everybody's time.
Exactly. And you know, Rob, I love how you summarize that piece, because when I think about businesses just in a whole, when we talk about DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, you can't get away from business being business to reach your bottom line if you don't have diversity, equity, inclusion. Because 25%, you know, I think it was McKinsey was sharing that 25% of your bottom line, your revenue is going to increase when you have diversity at the table, in the decision-making opportunities, when you're thinking about them as far as products and services. You cannot do this work, because who is the end user? Who is purchasing these things? Where are your products going? So think about this. I'm going to develop a solution or find out a solution, but I'm not going to involve the people who it's going to impact.
Right.
Can we just think about that in every decision that we make? Come on, Robert. How silly does that sound?
Right. That's not a business strategy. Hope and a prayer, right? That's. but I'm glad you pulled on this thread, because this is what I was hoping you would say, right? Yeah. And it leads us to, let's come back from the macro of changing the world and let's get back into Supergirl Shine.
Yeah.
When I say to you, which is going to be one of kind of the last questions I really wanted to hit with, it's like, okay, so what's your vision for it for the next 10 years, for the next 20 years, right? You previewed it early in the introduction when you essentially said, I want a line of corporations standing outside my virtual door, basically begging for me to help develop the workforce for them, so that they will essentially fulfill their DEI needs in the superficial way, but that more meaningfully, that they will wind up basically better prepared for the economic realities that they face as a company in the country that is evolving to become what it's becoming. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that vision. How do we get to, in your worldview, how do we take Supergirl Shine over the next decade to decade and a half and create that line outside the door of the corporate partners who are coming along and saying, like, we know we need this.
You know, you and I had this conversation briefly when we had a chance to talk maybe a few weeks ago when we met each other in LA. One of the things that we truly are looking at, and I've actually brought it to my team of market researchers and data scientists, are looking at how do we extend our markets to those areas where HBCUs, HSIs, and MSIs are currently, because we're doing the work and many of our girls go to those schools, but some of them don't. Some of them go to the PWIs, which is great because they've earned a spot and a seat to be there, right? Yep. Just like they would at an HBCU, HSI, or MSI. But one of the things that we know that we need doing is that industry keeps talking about, well, we have all of these needs. So if you think, you hear this deficit, it's 3.8 million jobs needed in STEM by 2025, but it's like 6 million jobs right now, Rob. I mean, come on, 6 million? And there are people around us that are unemployed. So the question is, how are you recruiting? Where are you recruiting? What do you really want your KPIs to be? Is this an initiative? Or is this a KPI that is a core value of who you are? Because your initiatives come and go, but a core value is who we are.
So, hey, guess what? Supergirl Shine can help you fulfill the initiatives.
That's it.
That's cool. We can do that part.
Yes.
We'll help you fulfill your PR exercise. Right. That's awesome. and your community obligations and all that. But here's the Coach Loretta.
Yes.
Right? Giving the advice to the executives and the CEOs that are running these organizations or the directors of marketing or the heads of HR. And what you're saying is like, think beyond just fulfilling your initiatives and your community grants programs, because that's great and we will help you do that. But think beyond that, because I'm already thinking beyond that. I'm developing your future workforce from like age 10 forward. So come along with me. That's what I'm hearing.
Exactly. Come along with me and also make sure that they have the tools and the resources to be strong candidates. Because one of the things that I'm grateful for, every Supergirl so far, when it's time for her to be employed, there is no entry level position for her. Because she comes with the skills, she comes with the internships, and so she comes with that type of level where there is no entry. And I am so grateful to be able to say that, because we know it works. So Company A, Company B, Company C, it's time for you to knock on the door of Supergirl Shine Foundation, because we have the method, we have the program, we have the talent, and you have the need. So when you put those together, we can now disrupt, bridge gaps, close gaps for this workforce deficit that we have. And we can do it together where you win, we win, but more importantly, our economy is built.
Yep. No, that's, home run. And you know what I love is we've spent like 45 minutes talking about this, and not until I'm about to say it did we use the word charity.
What is that?
Right. And sadly, frankly, sadly, that is still part of the whole kind of cultural realism around nonprofits, right? Is that they are charities. And in fact, the best nonprofits, and we could list 100 of them that are truly impactful at what they've done over the years, they think of themselves as corporations that have that are here to help create an economic outcome.
Exactly. Supergirl Shine Foundation is your best and sustainable workforce development teammate. I'm ready for you to call us.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I'm going to now turn you, the super facilitator of all others, mentors, I'm going to turn you into the mentor for the day. I'm going to give you the floor for a few minutes, and I would love for you to just kind of, there's a lifetime of wisdom here, but I would love for you to find like three things that we can condense down that people listening today could walk away and use to take action in their lives or their businesses or their careers, whatever it might be.
I'd like to speak to the entrepreneur who is a parent. The very first thing that you have to do is involve the most important people in your life in your decision to become an entrepreneur, because there are going to be changes made to your life, your lifestyle, and your time. But if those people that you love dearly and that care about you and you care about them understand that their position in their life, in your life, is not different, but you may have to show up differently, then you'll be able to weather the storm when times are long, days are long, and you may not be able to make all the events. That's the first thing, is have effective communication with the people you care about. In my case, it's my dudes, my capital D and my lowercase 2 Ds. It's very important. That's the first thing. And then the second thing I would say is, as an entrepreneur, I'm a woman of faith. Faith is a very pivotal part of who I am, because I know that I literally have had to have faith the size of a mustard seed just to show up some days, Rob, to be and do who I am. So exercise your faith in the way that you see fit. My faith comes through the Word of God. I believe in the Bible and I believe in the teachings of it, but I also believe in the practicality of being my brother and my sister's keeper. And how I do that is hopefully through my lifestyle. And the third thing I would say is to my mothers, you get a hug from me. I'm giving you a cyber hug right now. You are getting a kiss on your cheek from me. You are getting admiration for taking and preparing your body to bear and bore greatness. Thank you for that choice. I thank you for being a loving mother, a caring mother, at whatever stage you are in the life of your child. If it has been rocky to this day, on the day that you hear this particular podcast, it would be my hope that you would stop and say, if I'm alive today, that means I have a new day to make it right. Because mothers are such a great gift to children because those children become adults. Fathers are amazing beings as providers and sometimes nurturers in the situation if it's a single parent. But on most days, the mother is the one who helps lead, guide, and direct the decisions that our children are making. So I just want to hug our mothers right now, tell you that you are valued, tell you that you are needed, and tell you that you're special. Because at the end of the day, the greatest mentor that I believe any child has is that of a parent. And today we celebrate the mother.
Good for you. That is incredible. What a gift our listeners will be able to share in when they hear this. And as the unabashed mama's boy that I am,
it is.
I will tell you that, yes, I mean, like, God bless Jack Ryan for all he did in my life before he passed. But yeah, if not for Joyce Ryan all that she did in my life before she passed, like, I literally wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation with you. So good for you. It's not surprisingly been an absolute pleasure. I knew this was going to be a great conversation, and it will wind up being an incredible episode that people will enjoy and they'll benefit from, and they'll find some inspiration and some empowerment from. So I thank you for that. And I thank you for your time today, because you are all these things. You are a busy CEO, a busy mom. You're going to get done with us, and you're going to go take care, watch out, and help all those other mothers in your community at your son's game tonight. That's awesome. But at the same token, the work that you're doing with Supergirls and the foundation is just incredible. And so I can't wait for people to connect to this and hopefully connect to you. So with that, let's tell them, how can they find the organization? How can they sign up? How can they find you online? Where can they go on social media, et cetera? And then also, maybe if you want them to, how can they get to you individually?
Wonderful. So I will share all of that. Rob, thank you for being the vessel on this space. We appreciate you, your voice, your position, your purpose, and your intentionality in this space. So thank you for that. So Supergirl Shine Foundation, www.supergirlshine.com. You can reach us through our website. Follow us on social media. But let me give you something. Just don't follow. Just don't like us. Please become engaged. When we post something, say something. And then when we say something, share that. That helps us to get in front of your circle, which we know will help us to be able to get the message of workforce development is needed now and it's needed today. And if you want to follow me, I do a little something on social media, particularly on LinkedIn. I share hope, I sell truth, and I'm very intentional with my words. So you can reach me at Loretta Williams Gurnell. All social media handles for Supergirl Shine Foundation, Supergirls Shine. Supergirl Shine, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and X. We love to have you part of our community. And more importantly, we would love for you to become engaged, because when you become engaged, a Supergirl can shine. And when she shines, she can show up in her right space to be a problem solver, critical thinker, to close these gaps for workforce in STEM and in clean tech. We thank you for this opportunity.
Amen. That was awesome. Thank you so much. And now everybody knows how to connect with you, and they'll see it in the show notes. We'll link these addresses in the show notes as well, so people can find the links and get to you really easily. I can tell you, I've met some of the social media team, and I know they're talented, hardworking women. So, like, let's prop them up and give them their flowers as well. And again, just thanks for all your energy and all that you're doing.
Thank you, Rob.
As always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show via any popular podcasting platform, as well as find us on social media at Mentors Today. And if you'd like to connect with our host, you can find Rob at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias, and thank you.